Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We were sitting here peacefully when suddenly we were struck. It shook the entire classroom and the rubble came crashing down on us.
Israel escalates its devastating siege and forced expulsion of Palestinians in northern Gaza, with one of the deadliest single strikes killing at least 87 people on Saturday alone. Survivors say the dead include many women and children. Israel's also escalated its attacks on Lebanon, including hitting bank branches around the country it says are supporting Hezbollah. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has vowed to strike back at Hezbollah and Iran after a drone struck his vacation home Saturday.
Prime Minister, how is it going?
Well, 2 days ago, we took out Yahya Sinwar, the terrorist mastermind whose goons beheaded our men, raped our women, burnt babies alive. We took him out, and we're continuing our battle with Iran's other terrorist proxies. We're going to win this war.
So will something deter you?
No.
We'll go to Beirut and Tehran for a response. Then Trump supporter, tech billionaire Elon Musk, is pledging to give away $1 million every day to voters who sign his super PAC petition in battleground states. Many say that's illegal. We'll speak with the Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times investigative reporter Eric Lipton about his new piece, U.S. Agencies Fund and Fight with Elon Musk. A Trump presidency could give him power over them.
And so he is among the most complicated lights relative to the federal government of any single individual, really, the diversity of interactions he has. So the notion that this same person would then have a role as an arbiter of what is the appropriate federal regulations and what the appropriate spending is in these federal agencies, it's sort of hard to see how you could be both things.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The nightmare in Gaza is intensifying. Those are the words of a top UN official as Israel escalates its attacks amidst a devastating siege on northern Gaza. Health officials there say at least 87 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli airstrike on Beit Lahia on Saturday. Survivors say the dead include many women and children.
We were asleep around 12 a.m. when it suddenly felt like an earthquake hit the area. Debris was falling on us. We rushed outside after hearing screams of women and children and found that our neighbors had been targeted by massive bombs. Tons of explosives had fallen on a residential neighborhood full of civilians and displaced families. All those who were martyred here are children, women, and displaced people who fled from other areas due to heavy strikes, seeking shelter and what they believe to be a safer place.
Al Jazeera reports another 33 Palestinians have been killed so far today, including 18 in the Jabalia refugee camp. Israel's also targeting the last three hospitals in northern Gaza, the Indonesian, Al-Awda, and Kamel Adwan hospitals. Doctors Without Borders reports more than 350 patients are believed to be trapped inside the hospitals. Meanwhile, Israel's blocked six medical NGOs from entering Gaza. The groups include GLIA and the Palestinian-American Medical Association. Israel also killed four water engineers who were traveling to make repairs to the water infrastructure near Khan Yunis. According to Oxfam, the engineers were traveling in a clearly marked vehicle when they were attacked. On Sunday, the Palestinian Authority denounced Israel's escalating attacks, saying in a statement, quote, genocide is unfolding in northern Gaza in its clearest form, in full view of the world, marked by siege, starvation, forced displacement, destruction of buildings, aerial bombardment, targeting of health centers, and mass killings, unquote. Earlier today, the Palestinian journalist Abu Bakr Abed reported Farah al-Dhaloo has died in a hospital. She was the sister of 19-year-old Shaban al-Dalou, who burned to death last week in an Israeli strike on Al-Aqsa Hospital. Visit democracynow.org to see our interview with Abubakar Abed on Friday. Israel's also escalated its assault on Lebanon by attacking nearly a dozen bank branches of Al-Qard Al-Hassan, a financial institution with ties to Hezbollah. Many of the banks were located in residential buildings and played a critical role in Lebanon's financial sector. On Sunday, the UN peacekeeping forces in Lebanon, UNIFIL, accused Israel of deliberately demolishing another UN observation tower in what UNIFIL described as a flagrant violation of international law. U.S. envoy Amos Hochstein is now in Beirut for talks with Lebanese officials over a possible diplomatic deal to end Israel's attacks. As part of any deal, Axios reports Israel's insisting it maintain the right to fly its warplanes over Lebanon and that Israeli troops be allowed to keep conducting operations in southern Lebanon. Hochstein's visit comes 2 days after a drone from Lebanon hit Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's vacation home in northern Israel. Netanyahu was not home at the time of the incident, which caused only superficial damage to his home. In a separate attack, Palestinian fighters in Gaza on Sunday killed the commander of the Israeli military's 401st Brigade, Colonel Hassan Daksa. He's been described as the highest-ranking Israeli army officer killed in Gaza over the past year. The Biden administration's launched a probe after highly classified U.S. intelligence documents were posted online, showing that Israel's taking steps to launch a retaliatory attack against Iran. One document came from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, the other from the National Security Agency. The documents reference recent drills involving air-launched ballistic missiles as well as covert drone activity. On Friday, President Biden was asked if he knew how and when Israel would attack Iran. Biden responded by saying yes and yes. The leaked documents also confirm Israel has nuclear weapons, a fact that has long been known but has never been acknowledged by Israel. Donald Trump has doubled down on his threats to deploy the National Guard or military to target domestic critics if he wins. Trump was asked about his threat by Howard Kurtz on Fox News.
You talk about the enemy within. There's enemies, America's enemies outside. The enemy within is a pretty ominous phrase if you're talking about other Americans.
I think it's accurate.
Questions continue to be raised about Trump's mental state after he held a rally in Pennsylvania, which he called Kamala Harris expletive vice president. Harris responded by saying Trump's personal attack was, quote, demeaning the office of president. Trump also made crude comments about the size of the late golf legend Arnold Palmer's genitalia. Palmer's family also criticized Trump's remarks. One of Palmer's daughters has said her father, who died in 2016, was appalled and disgusted by Trump's first presidential campaign. Peg Palmer said, quote, "What would my dad think of Donald Trump today? I think he'd cringe," she said. In other campaign news, legal experts are questioning billionaire Trump supporter Elon Musk's offer to give $1 million daily prize to registered voters in swing states who sign his super PAC petition. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro has described Musk's giveaway as deeply concerning. In Indonesia, Prabowo Subianto was sworn in as president on Sunday, 8 months after winning the presidential election. He's a former general who's been implicated in mass killings in East Timor, Papua and Aceh, as well as the kidnapping and torture of activists in Jakarta. Prabowo is a longtime U.S. protege and the former son-in-law of former Indonesian dictator Suharto. Critics fear his rise to power could result in the return of military rule in Indonesia. In El Salvador, a court has acquitted and freed a group of environmental activists known as the Santa Marta Five. The five activists were instrumental in pressuring El Salvador to issue the world's first ever ban on metal mining in 2017. They were arrested in January of last year and accused of murder in what was widely denounced as political persecution. This is one of the Santa Marta Five, Saul Rivas, speaking after the ruling Friday.
We cannot be criminalizing and detaining people for something that happened in the past. When there was an investigation by the Truth Commission after the peace accords and the facts that could be considered as against humanity were cleared.
In Mexico, the Catholic priest, indigenous activist Marcelo Perez, was killed by two gunmen Sunday as he left Mass in the southern state of Chiapas. Perez was a member of the Tzotzil indigenous group, well known for his human rights activism on behalf of indigenous people and farm workers. This is a community member who'd worked with Marcelo Perez.
We have called on the government to clarify this case and bring justice to Father Marcelo, a great priest that always advocated for the poorest and for the people in need, that always listened and helped and now has been murdered. We demand all the government agencies to cooperate and give answers to clarify all this.
Tropical storm Oscar has slammed into Cuba after barreling through the Bahamas as a hurricane. Authorities warned of flash flooding, mudslides, and heavy winds as millions in Cuba are already grappling with a days-long power outage as its precarious electric grid continues to falter. Massachusetts Congressmember Jim McGovern called on the Biden administration to offer assistance to Cuba, posting on X, quote, U.S. policy has directly contributed to Cuba's energy problems by sanctioning ships carrying oil to Cuba and starving the country of foreign exchange earnings. In Mozambique, opposition presidential candidate Venancio Mondlane has called on his supporters to take to the streets in protest after a lawyer and an official with his Podemos party were shot dead in the capital Maputo. The lawyer, Elvino Diaz, was preparing to challenge the results of the October 9th election, although final results have not been announced. Early tallies show Daniel Chapo of the Frelimo party in the lead. Preliminary results show Moldova has narrowly voted to join the European Union. Near final results show just over 50% of voters supported joining the EU, a lower tally than expected. In a separate vote, Moldova's president failed to win a majority of votes, setting up a runoff on November 3rd. She's pushed for Moldova, a former Soviet republic, to move further away from Moscow's influence. She and others have accused pro-Russian groups of meddling and vote-buying ahead of Sunday's polls. In Australia, Indigenous Senator Lydia Thorpe was removed by force from a parliament event after she heckled King Charles following a speech to Australian lawmakers. Lydia Thorpe confronted the British royal as she walked towards him, decrying, "You are not our king." Other protests against King Charles' visit were held today. Australia's Indigenous people never ceded sovereignty after their land was colonized by Britain and never signed a treaty with the UK. And in Arizona, charges have been dropped against a deaf black man with cerebral palsy who was beaten and tasered by police officers in August after being falsely accused of stealing a cell phone. Newly released video of Tyron McAlpin's arrest showed officers violently confronting the deaf man who was unable to hear the officer's commands. He was then jailed for 24 days because he could not afford bail. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The nightmare in Gaza is intensifying. Those are the words of a top UN official as Israel escalates its war amidst a devastating siege and forced expulsion of Palestinians in northern Gaza. Health officials there say at least 87 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike on Beit Lahia on Saturday. Survivors said the dead include many women and children.
We were asleep around 12 a.m. when it suddenly felt like an earthquake hit the area. Debris was falling on us. We rushed outside after hearing screams of women and children and found that our neighbors had been targeted by massive bombs. Tons of explosives had fallen on a residential neighborhood full of civilians and displaced families. All those who were martyred here are children, women, and displaced people who fled from other areas due to heavy strikes, seeking shelter and what they believe to be a safer place.
Today, Al Jazeera reports at least 33 more Palestinians in Gaza were killed by Israeli attacks, including 18 in the Jabalia refugee camp alone. Palestinians have shared footage on social media that appears to show people in Jabalia being hit by a strike as they try to rescue an injured person in the street. Israel's also targeting the last three functioning hospitals in northern Gaza, the Indonesian Al Auda and Kamel Edwan hospitals. Doctors Without Borders reports more than 350 patients are believed to be trapped inside the hospitals. This is an urgent video call for help made Sunday by Dr. Marwan Sultan, director of the Indonesian hospital in northern Gaza.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm Dr. Marwan Sultan, director of the Indonesia Hospital. Since mid of the night, the Indonesia Hospital exposed to attack by the Israeli forces, and they attacked the second and third floor. Now we have 40 patients, 30 of them they are injured patients. There is some of the patients, they are very serious and they need oxygen and they need critical care. So the light electricity is off since midnight, and the medical staff, they cannot make the generator on because of the a lot of attack and a lot of danger. So we are calling you to make the medical staff and the hospital safe. Please, our brother and sister, or the humanitarian societies, urgent call, just to please help our medical staff and the injured people.
Dr. Marwan Sultan is the director of Indonesia Hospital in northern Gaza, speaking to us from there. Meanwhile, Israel's blocked six medical NGOs from entering Gaza. The groups include GLIA and the Palestinian American Medical Association. Israel also killed four water engineers who were traveling to make repairs to the water infrastructure near Khan Yunis. According to Oxfam, the engineers were traveling in a clearly marked vehicle when they were attacked. The destruction of the water system in Gaza has led to many diseases. On Sunday, the Palestinian Authority denounced Israel's escalating attacks, saying in a statement, quote, genocide is unfolding in northern Gaza in its clearest form, in full view of the world, marked by siege, starvation, forced displacement, destruction of buildings, aerial bombardment, targeting of health centers, and mass killings, unquote. Earlier today, the Palestinian journalist Abu Bakr Abed reported Farah al-Dalou had died of severe burns at a hospital just days after her 19-year-old brother, Shaban al-Dalou, burned to death last week in an Israeli strike on Al-Aqsa Hospital that led to a major fire that burned the displaced people encampment near the hospital. For more, we're joined by Dr. Ayaz Pathan, an emergency medicine doctor who returned from Gaza in August, spent time at the Indonesian and Nasser hospitals. Doctor, welcome to Democracy Now! Thank you so much for joining us. We just heard Dr. Sultan describing what's happening there at Indonesian Hospital. Can you tell us more, having spent time there and having direct contact with people continuing through to today?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Amy. You know, Dr. Sultan does an amazing job at this hospital. As a matter of fact, he was very clear about the fact that after the hospital was besieged, and from that besiegement, we could see all sorts of damage. I have spent weeks in that hospital. I've seen essentially every inch of that hospital, including the damaged floors from what happened late in 2023, the burned medical equipment, the drone fire attacks that we've seen. And one thing that he said is that he would invite the Israelis into that hospital anytime, any place to see what is going on, because there was no operations other than medical operations that were going on in that facility.
So if you can talk about the conditions and the number of women and children in this hospital, what this siege over the last weeks of northern Gaza means, and particularly in these three hospitals, you've spent time in one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what I found during my time there, and this is identical to the stories that you will hear from every healthcare worker that is both there or has traveled there, is that the types of patients you see essentially represent the population. And so when we talk about the Strip, we talk about a population which is about 50% children that are high school age or younger. And so everyone's experience is that you find a lot of children, you find a lot of women, and absolutely, are there men there? Completely. But in that age group that you would consider potentially enemy combatants, I would say that represented about 25, maybe 30% of the total injured population that I would see. And even that percentage I'm giving you is assuming that 100% of those males in that category are enemy combatants. So I think we're seeing a lot of collateral damage, far more than is acceptable by any stretch of the imagination.
And the effects, Dr. Pathan, of the whole area not being able to get humanitarian aid.
Yeah. So even when I was there, it was quite a challenge. Food insecurity was a huge issue. I was able to go to Kamala Dwan Hospital, which you had mentioned, and see their malnutrition clinic. I myself, who had privileged rights to food, lost about 13 pounds in about 2 weeks there. And now you can only imagine what people over months and months have had to deal with over there. And that's only the food issue. Now, talk about medications. There were times that I knew the exact medication I need to use, whether it was pain medication or an antibiotic, and unable to find that or use that, and realizing that in any other situation or country in the world, and quite honestly, even in the South, we had a little bit more access to some of these medications. It was tragic to watch people be in pain, die in pain, die of infections, which are completely preventable. And all in all, you're talking about Gaza, which has had about three dozen functional hospitals prior to all of this. That number has been taken down to essentially a third. And even the hospitals that we talk about, such as Indonesia Hospital, where I was in, half of that capacity was shut down due to damage from prior besiegement.
Dr. Pathan, we just have reports that Israel's killed four water engineers who are traveling to make repairs to the water infrastructure near Khan Yunis. According to Oxfam, they were traveling in a clearly marked vehicle when they were attacked. If you can talk, I mean, the horror of them being killed is horrifying enough. But the fact that they were trying to fix the water infrastructure, what that means, how devastated the infrastructure is leading to disease, including polio.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think water and the safety of the water is something that UNICEF has looked at. And I think on the order of 98% of the water that is available is not considered good for human consumption. So now you take an injured population, a sick population, even in the cases that are medical, for example, say pneumonia or something along those lines, the ability to be able to take care of these patients without something as simple as water, to be able to clean wounds, to be able to hydrate people, is a huge issue. I think the other point that you made is about just traveling. And so this is something that we've seen time and time again, including my own experience, including experiences from other healthcare workers that have been there, and then other NGOs. World Central Kitchen, we've seen the United Nations World Food Program being targeted despite being in vehicles that have been given permission to travel and are clearly marked.
Well, Dr. Ayaz Pathan, I want to thank you for being with us from North Carolina, emergency medicine doctor who returned from Gaza in August, spending time at the Indonesian hospital in northern Gaza and Nasser Hospital. When we come back, Israel's also escalated its attacks on Lebanon, including hitting bank branches all over the country. Stay with us. I Could Have Done More by John Williams, featuring Yitzhak Perlman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to Israel's escalating attacks on Lebanon. The Israeli military says it's hit buildings housing nearly a dozen bank branches of Al-Qaed Al-Hassan, a financial institution with ties to Hezbollah. Many of the banks were located in residential buildings and held the savings for many Lebanese residents. On Sunday, UNIFIL, the UN peacekeeping forces in Lebanon, accused Israel of deliberately demolishing another UN observation tower in what UNIFIL described as a flagrant violation of international law. U.S. Special Envoy Amos Hochstein arrived in Beirut today, and in his first remarks, he said Lebanon and Israel just committing to UN Resolution 1701 is not enough.
President Biden said our goal is a comprehensive agreement that implements UN Security Council Resolution 1701 and ensures this conflict is the last for many generations. 1701 was successful at ending the war in 2006, but we must be honest that no one did anything to implement it. The lack of implementation over those years contributed to the conflict that we are in today.
This comes as Hezbollah continues to fire missiles at Israel in response. On Saturday, a drone hit Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's seaside home in the northern Israeli town of Caesarea. Netanyahu and his family were not there. We'll talk more about Iran, but we begin in Beirut, where we're joined by Jamil Mouad, assistant professor of politics and policy at the American University of Beirut. Thank you for joining us from Beirut. If you can first talk about how the siege, how under siege you feel and people in Beirut feel and Lebanon, and then talk about Israel targeting the bank branches that they say support Hezbollah.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Actually, the situation in Lebanon is incredibly difficult. We currently live in limbo. Life has came to a halt, basically. With people concerned about when do they go about their normal life, when students would go back to schools, to universities, people would go back to their jobs, but also to their normal life. So there is a lot of anxiety going on. And this is due primarily to the fact that apparently there are no serious diplomatic efforts to end the war as soon as possible. Today, as you just mentioned, the U.S. envoy was in Beirut. This morning, we read that Netanyahu and the Israeli government has submitted a proposal for a potential ceasefire. Israel is adopting a maximalist position in this direction. They want to, they are demanding the right to engage in active enforcement in the south of Lebanon, that is intervening whenever they deem necessary, and also they are requiring a freedom in operating in the Lebanese airspace. And this is a clear violation of not only the 1701, but this is a clear violation of the Lebanese sovereignty. So either this proposal is a proposal to basically end the negotiations before they even start, or this is a proposal for Lebanon to surrender. I just remind you and everyone that the battle in the south is still ongoing. Hezbollah is still able to fight back and resist. The Israelis are not able yet to invade Lebanon as they probably would like to. The Hezbollah has still able to fire its rockets and drones to Israel. We've seen a week ago a drone has hit the Golani military base in Israel. 2 days ago, we saw that another drone, hit directly the home of the sea home of Benjamin Netanyahu. And if this tells us anything, it tells us that Hezbollah is still able to operate in the south. And the battleground will definitely shape the negotiations as well. Yesterday, as you mentioned, Israel attacked directly and bombed financial institutions related directly to Hezbollah. Of course, we all know that Israel has identified any institution, civilian institution,